Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics, with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist.
Mark, great to be with you again on another episode of Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics, available on all podcast outlets, including Apple Podcasts. So what's going
on?
How you
back.
Doing?
2022. Yeah. It's our first show together.
It's fantastic.
Since we began the year.
So, Mark, you know, I've been, on social media and so forth, I've been seeing your name everywhere. Talk shows, radio shows, TV shows, book interviews, this, that, and the other. You're like a celebrity. I'm like your sidekick now. It's awesome. It's great. You're getting all this attention. Are you enjoying the attention?
It's a two-edged sword. I definitely appreciate the opportunity to have more exposure, more access, bigger platforms so that I can speak to more people, and receiving a great degree of gratitude and thanks and appreciation, which is lovely. On the other hand, as you know, we both actually have real jobs, and we work full-time treating patients. I also do a lot of medical legal work. I am writing quite a bit. I started a Substack account on January 1st, which has received several thousand views with the first couple postings. I'm doing a lot of work with the book and a new book that's coming out in a few months. So where to find the time is really the question, and where to find the support and the staffing to help with all of the communication and the administrative work, which is one of the costs that comes with this kind of popularity.
Absolutely. Well, it's great to have you back on the podcast together again. You know, there's some name confusion going around, I've noticed as well. Your book, of course, is called United States of Fear, and you use the term mass delusional psychosis. And then I've seen this other name floating around from folks that actually aren't psychiatrists, and they're using the term mass formation psychosis. What's the difference, and where are these names coming from?
Well, Jeff, you know what happened? I and a psychologist by the name of Matthias Desmond, who actually works and practices in Belgium, and he's an instructor, he studies totalitarianism and has been teaching about it for quite some time. He came up with a term, I'm not sure when, it could have been 6 months, maybe a year ago, called mass formation. And what he means by that is mass psychosis. He's using the word formation as a synonym with the word psychosis. That term began to be picked up, and rightly so, by international media, because he has reached some really interesting cultural conclusions about how we came to be so fearful in the last couple of years. And as this has been happening in parallel, what I began to talk about in probably August, September or so of 2020, which I called mass delusional psychosis, or how fear began to be propagated throughout the United States, that term and his term merged together in some recent podcasts, specifically Joe Rogan with Peter McCullough and then Robert Malone more recently. And Dr. Malone created his own term, which he called mass formation psychosis, by putting the two together, mine and Desmet's. And that just took off all over the internet. And in fact, Google over the weekend, 1 week ago, had to shut down their search engine specifically for that term, mass formation psychosis. And if you typed it in, you would get a result saying, we're working on that.
So it's not really a word, is it?
It's a neologism. It's a creation. It's a hodgepodge of two terms, mass formation and mass delusional psychosis, that were written and created by a psychologist and a psychiatrist specifically. And it doesn't really exist. It's actually new. And unfortunately, because that term has taken off, it's provided a lot of target for the mainstream media, the press, and those who want to try to shut down the pursuit of the psychological explanations behind this pandemic, because it doesn't really exist.
So we've talked about this before when I interviewed you when your book first came out, but let's break it down again for our audience, because I think it's such an important concept and such an important term, an actual term, not a made-up term, and that is mass delusional psychosis. So a delusion is a fixed false belief. And so tell us a little bit about that, a mass delusional psychosis. Why do you use that term, and how are we seeing that play out currently?
Well, I created the explanation behind how the fear has been so powerful and how it's been driving across the country and across the world by explaining in my book, as you pointed out, which came out in November, United States of Fear, that as a group, as a society, that's the word mass, as a society, we have fallen prey to a fixed false belief that we are all under attack and are all going to die. And this is not true. This is provably false. And it came about because of a confluence of forces from government, from media, from private industry, who all told us and warned us and in fact threatened us legally with arrest and illness and death if we were to go against these mandates, the social distancing, masking, school closure, work closure regulations, that if we somehow violate them, that we are all going to die. And people bought into this. They bought into this wholesale as a group. As a group, they started to follow what was counter to reality, what was provably false, what was literally a delusion. And
Hang on a second. We know it's provably false now, but delusions usually start with some essence of truth. So early 2020, February, March, we actually didn't know what this COVID-19 thing was. And as is the case of the media and, of course, our government, we overreacted. We became hyperbolic with fear. We shut down the whole damn economy. We closed the churches. We isolated people. We freaked out as a nation. There was some truth to it in that we really didn't know what this was. But after 2 weeks to flatten the curve, we started to learn that this is just simply another coronavirus, which is survivable by almost everybody unless you're in a very high risk group. So the delusion actually started out with some semblance of truth, didn't it?
Well, this is true with everything that I describe in my book. Is there racism in this country? Absolutely. Is it systemic? Of course not. Do we pollute the environment with toxins? Are things dirty? Absolutely. Are we going to all die of world ecological collapse in 12 years? This was 30 years ago, by the way, and then it was 18 years ago, and then it was 4 years ago, and now it's 12 years in the future, according to Greta Thunberg and AOC. Absolutely not. Is President Trump going to take over the government and put everybody into prison? No, of course not. Is he a bit boisterous and maybe a bit full of himself? Of course he is. Every president is narcissistic. So yes, there's always an element. There's always a grain of truth. There is a virus. I don't believe that the virus was invented. I mean, it was created in a lab, but it actually exists. People do get sick, and there are people who die from it. But are we all going to die from it? Is there no treatment for it? Do asymptomatic people, people that are otherwise healthy, spread terrible amounts of disease, and that's why we have to stay home and cover our faces with face diapers? Of course not. So this is how fear can breed irrational thinking. And when it spreads and it gets ensconced and becomes a trauma, it's very similar to a woman who's abused by a man or a woman who's raped. Now, that actually happened. That's real. But is every man that she comes in contact with for the rest of her life going to abuse her and rape her? Of course not. So there's this traumatic aspect. There's this idea that we're re-experiencing the same thing, like Groundhog Day, for 2 years. We're going on now year three of this idiocy. Did something go wrong in the first few weeks in March of 2020? Absolutely. We're now in January of 2022. And we are doing the exact same thing we did back in March of 2020 to our children, keeping them home, keeping them masks, and threatening them with shots. This is what I mean by mass delusional psychosis.
The question is, did we head down this path accidentally, or is there an element of purposeful use of a fear in order to change the government, change the populace, and ultimately take over in power?
Well, I did not know that this was intentional right away. I thought that this was a combination of incompetence and ignorance. Now, there still is incompetence and ignorance throughout our government and in the media and in corporations, so that's also true. But as the errors, so-called errors, began to mount, and as the evidence began to accrue that really, medically speaking, we're actually going to be just fine in the U.S. and the rest of the world, it began to appear to me that this was actually orchestrated, that this has been planned. And now, in my view, it's irrefutable. When you look at the fact that, as I just said, we're doing the exact same thing now in January of 2022 to our children that we did in March of 2020, absolutely the same thing. And yet we have now 2 years of data and evidence from around the world that shows that asymptomatic spread is not a thing, masks don't work, healthy people don't spread disease, and children don't get sick and die. And on top of that, we have now close to a year of data that shows that these injections, they're called vaccines, but they're not, they're actually therapeutic drugs, do absolutely nothing, zero, to help people stay safe. And they actually increase now by about 100%, according to the data from England, Norway, and Iceland, and Germany, 100% increase the risk of catching a disease. And it's very likely, although it's the data's muddy in the US, but not around the world, that they're actually increasing death, all-cause mortality up almost 100% in England compared to people who don't get the shots. That the fact that this is still happening, and now we're pushing fourth, fifth, and sixth shots on children in Israel and in Northern Europe, this to me is not an error. This is not ignorance. This is not stupidity. This is sociopathy. It's sinister, it's evil, and it is planned.
You know, with a patient that has a delusion, if you will, that you might see in your practice, the difference is the adults in their life are not perpetuating the fixed false belief. And so I would assume somebody that just psychologically has this delusion, they're probably easier to treat than somebody who is constantly bombarded with the false message from the media, from unelected and elected bureaucrats, that in fact the delusion is actually true.
You know, one of the things that I've been talking about recently when people say, how do we get out of this? How do we move forward? How do we get through the fear? Is this, if you're an addict, if you're a heroin user, and you walk by your dealer every day and you say, I don't want to use again, and you walk by him and he sells you another vial of toxin, another vial of drug, it's going to be really hard to stop. But if you move to another neighborhood where there are no drug dealers, you have a much, much better likelihood of staying off the stuff. So when people are scared, but they want to move forward and they just don't know how, what I tell them, first thing you need to do, you need to cut off the supply. You need to get rid of the addict. I'm sorry, you need to get rid of the dealer. You're the addict.
Turn off
and
the
TV. And that means you've got to shut off the TV. You've got to shut off the media. You've got to stop with all of the catcalls to getting you hooked again on the drug. That is so important. And so people who are not on their phones, on their computers, listening to all this garbage all day long, have a much easier time in regaining their ability to think and their ability to move forward without being afraid.
It almost sounds like an AA 12-step recovery program.
Well, that is the inspiration for the book that I just started to write, which is going to be called tentatively A Recovery from Fear, a plan on how to move forward as an individual and as a nation. And it is modeled actually after the AA 12-step program, which is, as you know, the most successful way to break addiction known to man.
The first step in AA, I think, is admitting that you're powerless.
Well, you just read my mind, Jeff. The first step, as I have them laid out now, and they may change over the course of the editing in the next couple months, is this. Step one, acknowledge that you were afraid and express the will and the desire to lose the fear. Sounds a lot like alcoholism, doesn't it?
I love it. We'll open up a series of clinics across the country for a 12-step program to get rid of delusional psychosis. A delusional psychosis 12-step program. We can be sponsors of people.
The only difficulty is going to be how to find enough staff to actually man the facility, given that everyone is still
exactly.
Taking checks from the government. And they're not allowed to go to work because they just tested positive or they met somebody in the last 2 weeks that happens to have an asymptomatic illness.
So speaking of fear, we now have, we're now moving on to the next variant, of course. We've got Omicron. And it's reminiscent of Peyton Manning, who played for the, who did he play for? Indianapolis Colts, I think. I can't remember now. Famous quarterback. He'd go up on the line of scrimmage and he would audibleize. And the word he often used was Omaha. Omaha, Omaha, Omaha. Now we have Omicron, Omicron, Omicron. And it's an audible. It's a virus audible that has now come about, and a lot of people are getting infected. My phone was blowing up today with people that are testing positive or coming down with symptoms. The good news, though, about Omicron seems to be that it's much milder than the Delta variant. And I heard one of the epidemiologists, might have been Judy Mikovits, talking about it, or somebody who said the natural evolution of these viruses is as they mutate, they tend to become more infectious but less deadly, because the virus wants to survive. And the virus wants to replicate and survive, and it doesn't want to kill its host, because if it kills its host, then it can't continue to grow. It wants to get to a point where you don't even know that you have symptoms of the virus, so it can live symbiotically within you without you actually becoming ill. So each iteration of the virus as it mutates, we expect by natural history that it would become less and less deadly. So what I'm seeing is both vaccinated and unvaccinated, and even those that are recovered from COVID, coming down with Omicron. But the good news is it's milder, and it is susceptible to the same sequential early treatment protocols that we use to treat Delta. But the fear is tremendous. I have people calling my office every day with symptoms and without symptoms that just want to be tested because they want to know. I've stopped testing people. I said, I'm not testing you. Stop with the testing. Stop it. Stop with the heroin that you need to know. Take a test, stick something up your nose and be tested. You know, I was always taught in medical school, maybe you've heard this line before, we don't treat test results, we treat people. And so I'm just treating people for their symptoms. And it's usually I've got a bad cold, go home, take some chicken soup, a little vitamin C, et cetera. Couple, 3 days, you get better and you're fine. If you've already recovered from COVID and you get Omicron, this Omicron seems to be acting as a booster, if you will, for your natural immunity. I heard Peter recently say, Peter McCullough, that he was a little bit surprised that Omicron was breaking through natural immunity, but the degree to which this virus has mutated, it makes some sense. But that he's seeing studies that show Omicron will boost your natural immunity, very likely make you immune in the future, and that it doesn't seem to allow for reinfection of Omicron. And then, you know, I think the majority of people I'm seeing getting infected are people that are already vaccinated. As a matter of fact, just a few minutes ago, one of those patients texted me, fully vaccinated and boosted, is now ill with COVID. We're assuming it's Omicron. There's a little bit of Delta still around, and he's pretty sick. So we're, you know, adding all the usual medications, ivermectin, inhaled budesonide, the nutraceuticals, et cetera. Tomorrow we'll get him some monoclonal antibodies and so forth. And he'll be fine because he called me within a day of coming down with symptoms. But the fear, again, that's being driven by this new variant that is truly infecting people, but it's not the infection that's the problem. It's the associated fear. It's that Governor Newsom now has reinstituted indoor mask mandates for everybody. Although it was funny, I was watching the Ram game today. Rams 49ers, unfortunately, they lost. But here, SoFi Stadium, 70,000 plus people. And as they show the fans in the stands, there isn't a soul who's wearing a mask. You show the players and the coaches on the sidelines. Not a single player is wearing a mask. Yet here we are having our governor institute mask mandates for any indoor activity for all his subjects. And it's just crazy. We're going back to February 2020. Reinstituting the same failing policies that didn't work the first time. We clearly did not learn from our mistakes, but yet here we are. We're going to keep the kids home. We're going to shut down businesses. We're going to mandate Zoom now for meetings and so forth. None of that worked before, and now we're dealing with a virus that's even less deadly. So what's going on?
I heard they're going to move the Super Bowl to Texas, which I think would be really, really funny, because it would actually prove the point that ultimately reality wins. And ultimately, the truth always emerges victorious. There was a Babylon Bee meme that came out about a week ago that said, finally, businesses are actually coming to terms with what's real rather than fantasy, and they're requiring positive test results as proof of vaccination to come into a restaurant and eat. And this is so funny, because it's actually a pictorial representation of the data that we've been seeing over the last 3, 6, 9 months, which is that the more shots you get, the more likely you're going to catch this Omicron variant. The rate of infection among those who receive shots is double that of those who haven't. Double. And I'm not talking about in pure numbers, because obviously there are more people who've received shots than haven't received shots. I'm talking about the rate. the actual rate of infection is higher for people who get the shot, which leads me to the conclusion that you are, objectively speaking, better off medically if you do not get this shot. You are more likely to not get sick or to get some sort of asymptomatic infection that will give you natural immunity but won't actually make you sick. All of these hospitalization numbers that we're getting, they're all bogus. Absolutely false. 50% of all of the hospital inpatients that come in that are so-called COVID patients are actually coming in for completely other reasons, and they're getting tested and they're getting these positive test results, which are probably false, but regardless, they're asymptomatic. And the hospital is getting tons and tons and tons of money for this, because when the positive test results come back, they can start charging thousands of dollars more as a COVID patient, even though the person came in to get a pin removed from his leg after an orthopedic surgery. Also, I know from hearing from medical workers and colleagues who are in hospitals in Los Angeles, most of the people that are in the hospital who actually went in diagnosed initially with this infection, they're in there for observation. They're asymptomatic. They go into the hospital because they want to get a test or they got a positive test result. They go into triage. They say, "What's your symptom?" "I don't have any symptoms." "Well, why are you here?" "Well, I got a positive test." "Oh, well, you need to be under observation in the hospital." They go into observation. They get an IV bag hanged. They get a couple Tylenol and they sit in the bed for about 24 hours. It costs the hospital about $25. They charge about $11,000. Because it's a COVID admission, and the hospital profits about $10,580. And this is about half of the patients that are not just incidentally COVID positive, they actually show up for that reason. Right. So even the 50% number is BS. About 80% of those people are asymptomatic. So unless you look not just at hospital admissions and diagnoses, but whether the people are actually there being treated for serious illness or whether they're there for observation, these numbers mean nothing.
Which is why bottom I stopped line, testing.
Well, exactly. I went into my gym last week to see my trainer, and I just told him, you know, by the way, over Christmas, I think I caught this cold slash deathly plague. You know, it's the same thing. And I didn't really have many symptoms, except I was a little chilled. I kind of shivered a bit. I was tired, didn't have a fever, didn't lose my sense of safe of taste or smell. And after a few days, I started getting out, walking, got my energy back. I've been fine for about 7 days. You know what he did? He said, "I can't train you unless you go out and get a test." And I said, "For what?" He said, "Well, we need to know if you're safe." I said, "What does that even mean? I don't have any symptoms." "Well, I don't care if you don't have any symptoms. I need to know that you don't have a positive test." I said, "That is insane, and I am not doing that." Absolutely not.
I heard somebody say, what we need to start doing is doing breast biopsies on every woman, even though they have no symptoms and they have normal mammograms, because we need to make sure that they don't have breast cancer.
That is a perfect analogy. And it would make people look at you as if you're insane. But it is exactly the same thing that we're doing now. The only difference is that when you say that, you're not saying that to somebody who's scared.
Exactly.
Now we're talking about scared people. And as you said earlier, this fear is really what still is driving this nonsense. Right. People are still scared. And that is why they are lining up around the block. Just tonight, as I'm driving home, I see 35 or 40 cars with two police motorcycle units managing traffic, because they're all sitting there with their engines running in their cars, waiting one at a time to drive past a medical clinic on Santa Monica Boulevard. And guess what they're there for? They're there to get their tests. Why Insane. Are they getting tested? I don't know. None of them are sick. But they're there because they want to make sure that they're safe and they want to keep everyone else safe. I don't even know what safe means anymore. The word means nothing. It's been so raped that the word actually, to me, just says compliant. That's all it means.
Exactly.
We have gone past the stage of fear and concern and overreach to a true theater of the absurd. Well, 2 years into this.
The delusional psychosis has manifested itself in obsessional behavior, an OCD-like behavior. They're so obsessed over it that the compulsion is they must get tested to feed that obsession. And that's what's happening. That's why I stopped testing. Patients call with mild symptoms. I say, "No, you don't need to come in and be tested." "Well, what do I need to do?" "I need to be treated." Stay at home like you would if you had a bad cold. Have some chicken soup, some vitamin C. You're going to be fine. I've got a patient and friend who works in the ICU at Chalk Hospital, Children's Hospital of Orange County. I won't say her name, but I know she listens, so she knows who she is. And she feeds me this information as well. that right now in Children's Hospital of Orange County, there are exactly zero children in the ICU. And most of the kids that are there with quote unquote COVID are there with some unrelated illness that they happen to test positive. The accuracy of that test is unknown, but they're there because they tested positive. And there's a patient I found out about recently, sports injury, blew up his elbow, needed orthopedic surgery on his elbow. So sure enough, as is the protocol of every hospital, for any reason that anybody needs to be admitted, they're tested. And you can be sure that some of those tests are false negatives. So this person, of course, tests positive for COVID, zero symptoms of COVID, but listed as a COVID hospitalization. Even Emperor Fauci let it slip from his lips. When he said that he acknowledged that many, if not half of the patients that are in the hospital for COVID are in the hospital with COVID, not in the hospital because COVID. So help us here, Mark. Help us with this. You're writing a book about how to overcome it. You gave us the first step. Teach us. How do we teach people how to overcome so they're not waiting in a damn line with no symptoms to feed their obsession?
Well, the first thing that you have to do after acknowledging that you're actually afraid is recognize that feeling fear does not necessitate you to act as a fearful person. This is really important, and a lot of people don't understand this. We have become such an emotionally feeling-oriented and feeling-driven culture. Feel your feelings, act for them, act with them. Remember London Breed dancing without her mask in front of Tony. You know how she was let off the hook for that, not following her own mask mandates in San Francisco in a nightclub 3 months ago? Huh. She was feeling the feeling.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's okay. I mean, she felt it. I don't know what it was. I don't know what the feeling was, but she felt it. So she's free and clear.
Yeah, like, well, AOC. AOC runs to Florida to party with her friends. And as a matter of fact, I just heard today she tested positive for COVID.
She sure enough did.
Yeah. Perfect.
But she was feeling it, and she was hanging out with the right crowd. She was hanging out with a group of transvestites and making out with them at a dance party. So, you know, that's a protected community, and you don't have to follow the rules with them. And now she's sick. I'm sure she'll be fine, but the fact that she was feeling it means that she doesn't have to follow the rules. So what we have now is a group of people who are still scared. They're feeling fear, and they're acting as if they need to be afraid. Well, you don't. I know this sounds kind of silly and kind of simple, but it's a really important point. Just because you're scared does not mean that you have to act that way. Now, I understand that sometimes fear takes over. Sometimes you don't really feel that you have good control of your fear. And in those cases, you need to do something more. But many people now are just feeling this kind of simmering fear. It's like, as you said, this sort of obsessive compulsive disorder where you feel compelled to do something just because you're driven to do it. One of the first things that I tell my patients who have OCD is, you don't need to do it. Well, if I don't do it, then something horrible will happen. Really? You already checked the door, it's locked. If you don't check it 16 more times, somebody's gonna break in. Well, of course they will. How? And they have no answer to that because it's irrational. So what you need to do, just like an obsessive compulsive person, is you need to acknowledge that you are the problem, you are the fearful one. Choose to do the right thing, the rational thing, and then grit your teeth and survive. And you will survive. And then you know what? Once you survive the first time, it is a lot easier to survive the second, third, fourth, and fifth time. Once you go against that meme of the guy last week who's got 16 nasal swabs in every one of his fingers and two up his nose, and he says, man who tests 28 times a day says, I can stop anytime I want. Well, just like that guy, you have to actually try to stop and do it just for that one day. I'm not going to go get a test.
So develop the habit of not acting on the fear.
Yes.
And the more you do that, the less fear you'll have and the easier it'll be to not act on that fear.
It's called extinguishment. You will extinguish your fear by exposing yourself to the fear as much as possible and not acting with it, but acting in spite of it. That, more than anything, will help us move forward.
Got it. Wise words from Dr. Mark McDonald on Informed Dissent. Mark, great to be with you again for another episode. I look forward to doing this again in the near future. Happy New Year to you, and safe travels on your adventures.
Happy New Year, a year without fear. Time to lose it.
Indeed, indeed.
You've been listening to Informed Dissent with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics.